Hello everyone, grab that sun cream and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News
for the 24th of July 2024.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacons. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD, simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have myself, Nathan, Christine, Angela, Helen, Mina, Simon, and of course, the man himself, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have the latest Beacon update from Helen,
the quiz with Mina. We have the latest news for the Black Country. There is, as always, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger.
We hear from Mina, who has the latest weather forecast for the week ahead. Local news to start, though, with Christine. But first, Angela.
Extra money is to be spent on helping Wolverhampton households through the cost of living crisis, the City Council says. Up to £2.6 million will go towards opening four more community food shops, providing children with access to food during holidays, tackling bed poverty and supporting care leavers. The money was announced by the previous Conservative government as part of the Household Support Fund, HSF. Grants will also be given to community and voluntary groups to help residents meet essential daily living costs, the council added. Earlier this year, another community shop and cafe opened in the city, offering people the chance to buy food at affordable prices through the HSF and the council. Residents can register to use the service for an annual price of £3 in order to buy the food at lower prices. We ask the people of our city to tell us where the real pressure points still are for them and how we can best help, Council Leader Councillor Stephen Simpkins said. He said the authority would work with communities and organisations to build financial resilience to help residents in the future. Money will also be spent on grants for schools to ensure children have access to food before and after school where needed, support tenants to move on from temporary accommodation, and help families in meeting the cost of school uniforms.
And residents across the region are bracing for an increase in water costs over the next 5 years, as water company watchdog Ofwat is warning that water bills are set to rise by 21% over the next 5 years. According to data from bathroom and kitchen retailer Tap Warehouse, the average person in the Black Country uses 150 litres of water per day. A typical bath will use around 100 litres of water. A third of all water usage in households comes from the toilet. Leaving the tap running as you brush can waste up to 10 litres a minute, and only boiling the amount of water you need for your cuppa will save water as well as energy. Additionally, when cooking food, using the wrong size pan can cause even more wastage when cooking. In light of the increase and potential scenarios where costs can incur unnecessarily, Nancy Emery, home expert at Tap Warehouse, has shared her top tips on how to save water in the home. She said, "Every year we're seeing our bills and household costs increase with rising water rates. Water bills are either estimated, which means you pay a fixed amount depending on the size of your home, or alternatively, a water meter is installed, meaning you only pay for what you use. All new homes are fitted with water meters, and it's possible for you to install one for free on request. This could be a quick fix to help you regulate your water use and keep costs down. There are also a variety of household gadgets that can help, including water-regulating shower heads, tap inserts which introduce air into the water flow, reducing the amount of water and energy used, shower timers and water butts, along with simple tricks you can follow around the house. Altogether, Nancy highlighted four ways she claims can reduce costs and keep those hard-earned wage packets in residents' bank accounts. So, let's head back over to Angela, who can give us Nancy's top tips on keeping water bills down as a price hike looms.
1. Install a tap aerator. A tap aerator is a nifty little gadget designed to reduce the required flow of water from your taps, which will in turn reduce your water usage. The aerator simply attaches to the spout of your tap and can reduce the flow of water by up to 10 litres per minute, costing around 3 pence for every minute the cold taps are running, and slightly more when running the hot tap. Aerators can be used in not only kitchen taps, but also in bathroom taps, shower heads, hot tubs, hose pipes, and pond pumps. 2. Fix leaky taps. A simple tip to saving water in your kitchen and bathroom is by checking that your taps don't leak or drip. A trickling tap can use over 450 litres a day or a huge 175,000 litres of water in a year. This costs the average homeowner over £300 extra on their water bill, which can be prevented with a simple fix. Usually, leaking taps are caused by a degraded tap washer, so it's a good idea to find the root of the problem. 3. Switch to a water-saving showerhead or grab a flow regulator. For many people, a daily shower is likely their biggest usage of water, which is why it's a good place to begin saving. A showerhead can help reduce your water consumption by up to 50% by either regulating the flow of water through the showerhead or adding air to the water. Both of these will allow you to have a greater shower whilst using less water. Similar to my first tip, you can switch out your showerhead for an aerator showerhead. Alternatively, if you're on a tight budget, then a flow regulator is a great option. They simply screw onto your shower hose and control the flow of water, reducing the maximum flow and saving you large amounts of water. The average flow rate of a shower is between 10 to 15 litres per minute, but with a flow regulator, this can be reduced to 4 to 10 litres per minute. 4. Keep the shower head clean. Another easy way to cut down on your water bills is by improving the performance of your shower head by keeping it clean. Showerheads can become clogged up with limescale and mineral deposits, particularly in hard water areas. If this limescale blocks the nozzles, you'll need to turn up the power on your shower to get the same flow. Even worse, if the nozzles are directing water sideways, this water will be diverted away from you and go straight down the plug hole. Cleaning your showerhead will ensure it continues to work at its best without wasting any water.
Up next, we hear from Helen, who of course has for us the Beacon update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from Beacon here with your weekly update, and I'm starting this week with a request for you to mark your calendars. There's a health screening event taking place at Hales Owen Town Centre Library on July the 27th. You can get expert advice on fitness, weight, blood pressure and cholesterol, and it's a great opportunity to take a step forwards towards a healthier you. So don't miss out on this chance to get informed and stay healthy. We hope to see you there. Now, an exciting opportunity. Wow, this really is. We've got two paid internships available for blind and partially sighted people through the Thomas Pocklington Trust's Get Set Progress programme. Our positions are Administration and Project Support Intern and Communications Intern. Why don't you join us to support vital operations and help celebrate our 150th anniversary? No experience is needed, just bring your passion to make a difference. Apply now at www.beaconvision.org/jobs or email people@beaconvision.org. call 01902 880111 for more information. The closing date is the 31st of July at 5 p.m. Now, we recently celebrated Black Country Day. Yep, so if that was you too, happy Black Country Day. We are delighted to have been supporting our community to live well with sight loss for almost 150 years. So cheers to our incredible heritage and the amazing people we serve. Now, I'm finishing this week with a number for you. 9,236. What do you think that is? Well, in fact, that is the number of calls we received at Beacon last year. That's roughly 35 calls a day, and our reception team handled them all with care. Thank you to all our supporters for making it possible for us to be there for people with sight loss. That's it for this week. I'll be back again soon for another update. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that update, Helen. Next up, we have another block of local news. And up first, we hear from Christine.
New support sessions are starting next month for people living with dementia and their carers. The drop-in sessions are open to anyone and will be held throughout August and September at the Crystal Gateway in Briley Hill. There are four different groups, with all of the sessions running from 10 a.m. to 12 noon in the garden room at the Brettle Lane site. The pre-dementia group will offer information for those waiting on a diagnosis or advice on how to get a diagnosis. It will run on Tuesday, August 6th and Tuesday, September 3rd. The dementia anxiety group will offer advice and coping strategies on anxiety in dementia from the point of view of both the carer and those living with the condition. That session runs on Tuesday, August 13th and Tuesday, September 10th. A general dementia advice session will be a drop-in for anyone with questions or looking for advice about living with dementia. That will run on Tuesday, August 20th and Tuesday, September 17th. And finally, a dementia information session will run from 10 a.m. to 12 noon on Tuesday, August 27th and Tuesday, September 24th. It will offer a full range of advice and information on how to live well with dementia. Councillor Andrea Goddard, Cabinet Member for Adult Social Care, said, "With dementia on the rise and people going undiagnosed, this is a fantastic chance to meet advisors face to face without the added stress of having to make an appointment. You can have an informal chat about your needs and find out what support could be available to you. We will be running one session per week throughout August and September, and depending on how successful this proves to be, we shall assess as to whether to continue the service into the future. For more information, email demgate.services@dudley.gov.uk or call 01384 813315.
Now then, here's a milestone moment to celebrate. As a woman who stole the hearts of millions when they appeared on TV as the UK's oldest identical twins is celebrating her 100th birthday. Lillian Cox is one half of the telefamous Tipton twins, who found fame on their 95th birthday in 2019 alongside sister Doris. The lovable pair charmed presenters when they appeared on BBC Breakfast, ITV's Good Morning Britain and This Morning, with funny jokes about wearing their drawers inside out and their fondness for Hollywood heartthrob Jason Statham. Sadly, Doris passed away in January 2021 after contracting coronavirus, and Lillian has remained in Tipton ever since. Lillian started the celebrations on July the 18th, having a big party at her assisted living home in Tipton, in preparation for turning 100 on Saturday, July the 20th, and said she would be up until midnight the day before to bring the special day in. Announcing the milestone on social media last Thursday, Lillian said, "I've made it to my 100th birthday week. Cheers to you all. I'm truly blessed to have lived to 100 years and I have 10 decades of special memories which I'm forever grateful for. I'm looking forward to seeing my friends and family today at my 100th party, which my lovely daughter Vivian has arranged for me. Any excuse for a party, and I think this is a huge one. She was joined by her daughter Vivian Clark and longtime musical pal Terry, who she has watched play music live for years, as well as friends and extended family. Parked next to Terry with a big bunch of roses, Lillian said, "This lovely fella bought me these flowers. I've been looked after well by my daughter, bless her. To be honest, I don't feel any different. I've got a lot of life left in me." Terry added, "She follows me everywhere on my gigs. I never tell her not to come. She's a superstar." But one thing she said she can't forget is her twin sister Doris. She said, "We can't forget Doris. She was one of the best."
Now it's time to test your knowledge. Here come the quiz questions for this edition, and they're brought to us by Mina. Hello and welcome to this week's flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, these are your questions. Here we go. Question 1. How many varieties of watermelons are there? Question 2. Which country hosted a huge bikini parade? Question 3. What is the summer equivalent of making snow angels? Question 4. What is Juno the goddess of? Question 5. What did Thomas Wall start to do to save his summer workers' jobs? And finally, question 6. What are ice lollies called in America? I will be back with you later in the show to answer all these questions. But for now, keep your ears open for a bonus little puzzle from Roger too. With Batman celebrating his 85th anniversary this year, I think we may have had a visit from the Riddler in this week's Did You Know section. Best of luck!
Cheers for those questions, Mina. I'll get my mind working on them. Up now, however, is another block of local news.
This week, we'll see the return of what is widely considered to be the best meteor shower of the year, the Perseids. The annual meteor shower is active from July 17th to August 24th and will peak between August 12th and 13th. At its peak, those looking up could spot up to 100 meteors per hour. The Perseids are caused by the Earth slamming into the debris left behind by comet 109P-Swift-Tuttle. The shower is called the Perseids because the meteors seem to originate from the constellation of Perseus. Perseus can be found not too far from the handle of Ursa Minor, also known as Little Bear or the Little Dipper because of its resemblance to a ladle. To the right of Ursa Minor is a constellation called Cassiopeia, which looks like a wonky number 3. The bright star below and to the right of Cassiopeia is likely to be Murphak, which sits right in the middle of Perseus. But don't worry if you're struggling to tell the difference between your Aries and your Aquarius. Meteors can generally be seen all over the sky. Shropshire's hills are a fantastic location for stargazers to take in the starry skies above. The top of the Wrekin, Carding Mill Valley, Crossdyke Car Park at Boiling Well, Pole Cottage and Shooting Box Car Park all have the darkest Milky Way class rating, meaning that the night skies are dark enough to see the Milky Way with the naked eye.
From the meteor showers of the night sky to harnessing the bright rays during the day. At a new solar farm expected to generate enough energy to power almost 8,000 homes in its first year has been given the green light in South Staffordshire. The 22.5 MW development, earmarked for 77 acres of farmland south of Fort Ashes near Standiford, was approved by South Staffordshire Council's Planning Committee. Several plans for renewable energy developments have come forward for sites across the district in recent years, and a number of them have proved controversial, sparking many objections. But members of the planning committee heard there had been just two objections from neighbours submitted in response to the application, as well as one letter of support. Brood and Cirwyn Parish Council also objected to the proposal, highlighting the use of agricultural land in the Green Belt for the development. David Ralph, who spoke on behalf of objectors at Tuesday's meeting, said issues also included the use of an existing private road off Old Stafford Road to access the site during the construction process and operation of the solar farm. The biggest concern is the damage that the proposed development will cause to the access to the site, he added. They are responsible for maintaining the access road for the people who reside there. We have a real concern they are going to be out of pocket for repairs and they are going to have to pay for it. But Jack Halstead, Development Manager at Renewable Connections, said, "We acknowledge the objections and I would like to reassure members the access has been fully considered. I acknowledge the comments about potential financial exposure. We have written to the objectors on multiple occasions to reassure them pre- and post-construction all repairs will be carried out by Renewable Connections and they would never be out of pocket. The proposal has been well received in the local community and has received positive feedback during the consultation process. I would like to highlight the agricultural use of the site will be retained for the duration of the project and there will be no loss of agricultural land. The temporary solar development will not make the site a brownfield site and we acknowledge it is in the Green Belt." A report to the Planning Committee said, "Solar farms are not now an uncommon feature within the Green Belt across the UK. In many cases, such development has been allowed within the Green Belt on the basis that it is required within the national and local interest and that it has been deemed necessary in that particular location. Overall, national Green Belt policy recognises that the renewable energy benefits of solar development can qualify as a very special circumstance to justify inappropriate development within the Green Belt. The site would be retained in its current agricultural use for the life of the proposal, with the majority being planted with a combination of grassland, which would enable existing sheep grazing to continue. This would include land between and underneath panels. Wolverhampton's New Cross Hospital is now powered by a solar farm." Now then, all this talk about night skies and daylight serves as a reminder to us all of the importance of natural light and the role it plays with our vision when we are living with sight loss. The following article from Soundings contributor Iona provides us with an examination of its importance and also provides us with some insights into how to maximise natural light for optimum safety and practical choices to consider for lighting our homes.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, I'm Iona.
and this is an article about lighting in the home. Did you know that if you are aged 60 or over, you will need about 3 times more light to read than a 20-year-old? And if you add a sight loss condition to this, then it could mean that a 60-year-old with a sight loss will need approximately 6 times more light than a sighted 20-year-old. And it is not just more light that you need, but effective lighting too. For those with a visual impairment, the control and adaptation of light can be hugely helpful, with good lighting making an important difference to contrast and colour, helping you to see what you need to much more clearly. In this article, we explore the importance of natural light and how this can be maximised in the home, and also some principles that can have a positive effect on good lighting in your home. As we know, natural light is important for personal health and good vision, and it can influence mood, sleep, and motivation. Most people express a liking for windows and natural daylight in their homes. Windows can also give you a sense of connection to the outside world. However, windows may be obstructed internally by large objects placed on the windowsill, net curtains, or curtains that are not fully drawn back. Externally, windows can be blocked by vegetation, or if the windows become dirty, that can blur the view outside too. Furniture placed against the window may also block light from entering the room. Natural light can prove to be a hindrance if it produces glare, and the effects of sunlight on the window may change according to the time of day, as well as the weather conditions. So, control of optimum natural light includes opening curtains wide and keeping windows clean, removing net curtains, using vertical blinds to control the direction of light entering the window, and using roller blinds to prevent light shining into your eyes, using a blue light blocker filter lens in your glasses, which can help to prevent glare and improve contrast. Often sitting with your back to the window can be helpful so that you are not facing incoming streams of glaring light, and the light will shine on whatever you need to look at. So let's move on to light bulbs and lighting. Lighting in the home needs to be evenly distributed and bright. This means that when moving around the home, we do not need to adapt to the changes of light and shadow in each area. Well-lit stair areas and hallways are important safety considerations. Using brighter light bulbs is the most obvious way to boost lighting. We used to think of brightness of light was dependent on higher wattage bulbs, but since the introduction of energy-saving light bulbs, the wattage is much lower and the brightness is actually measured in lumens. You could install extra light fittings to increase the amount of light where you need it, such as adding light to the corner of a room or in a stairwell. Lighting also increases security because it can indicate that a house is occupied. Here are some tips that can help light your home safely and effectively. The use of wider lampshades will distribute the light around a room. However, this may not be appropriate for overhead lights, as the wider shades will expose the bulb when you look up, creating uncomfortable glare. Another option would be to use a circular paper shade that encases the bulb and distributes the light evenly around the room. Uplighter light fittings can give an even spread of light, bouncing light onto the ceiling and then back into the room. The bulb is also shielded from your eyes. Having a number of lights in a room instead of one very bright light can produce an even spread of light with no dark places. Fitting dimmer switches is another way to control the amount of light in a room or an area. Ideally, walls should be painted in pale colours and be matte, rather than gloss. You will find that using daylight style lighting which gives off light that is shaded with blue and simulates the natural colour of daylight, can be valuable. It's important to consider task lighting. An old-fashioned standard lamp is now not considered to be the best option here. Task lamps can illuminate a particular area or an object to make it easier for you to complete a task, such as food preparation or carrying out hobbies like knitting, crochet, or doing puzzles. Moving a lamp just a few inches closer will significantly increase the amount of light, so it is much more effective to bring a light closer to help with a detailed task, rather than relying on overhead ceiling lights. In the kitchen, under cupboard lighting can be helpful for lighting work surfaces. So here are some tips for positioning your task lamp. Keep the actual bulb out of your line of sight. It may be excessively bright. Light thrown from behind and above your shoulder is best. Put the lamp in a position that minimizes any shadow. If you are reading, then that means placing the lamp so that light is cast over your shoulder. Keep the lamp clear from the table edge. If there is a cable, ensure that it isn't a trip hazard. A light with an adjustable arm can make it easier to move the lamp into the best position for you. A portable task lamp can be useful as you can take your lighting wherever you need it. The most effective type of portable lamp is a rechargeable one, as it does not have a cord and does not need to be plugged in when you use it. A task light can be a life-enhancing investment for you. However, it is important to buy one that is just right for you. You can find many advertisements from companies that promise all sorts of benefits from the lighting that they sell. But it is advisable that you visit your local low vision centre or contact the RNIB helpline. Your individual needs can be discussed and recommendations made. Contact details will be provided at the end of this article. We know that improved lighting should help people carry out their usual activities more easily, so there should ideally be a high and even level of ambient light throughout the home to allow people to move around safely and sufficient light for specific tasks too. Some health conditions have implications for lighting. People with albinism experience discomfort in bright light. People who are autistic may find bright and/or flickering light disturbing. People with lupus may be uncomfortable in ultraviolet light. And people with dementia may be agitated when daylight is lacking. As we have shown, improvements do not have to involve major works. Huge differences can be made with very small changes and at low cost. The aim is to create a visual environment that maximizes your useful sight, is free of glare, offers an even level of light, and offers easy adjustment and control of all lighting sources and levels. Many people have created their own fixes for inadequate light. A torch on your keyring can be useful when unlocking your front door. Some people have reported that keeping a torch just inside your food cupboard can be helpful in finding specific foods or reading labels. If you need to consider and possibly make changes to the lighting in your home, it is recommended that you contact your local low vision centre. If you do not know where this is, you can contact the RNIB helpline to find out local resources for your particular location, or ask to speak with a staff member from the RNIB shop who will be able to talk over your needs in this context and recommend what is best for you. You can also buy lighting items and other items relating to sight loss directly from the RNIB shop, and there is a return service if your purchase proves to be inappropriate for you. You can contact the RNIB helpline and also the RNIB shop by calling the following number during office hours: 0303 123 03039999. Again, that's 03031239999.
DNF Soundings.
Next up, we have another block of local news.
The sculptor whose iconic black iron horses have been seen by millions of railway passengers returned to the Black Country to see one restored to her former glory. Nestled along the main line between Birmingham and Wolverhampton is a little station where trains only arrive twice an hour, but it's one of the best kept stations in the country. Kevin Atherton was invited to Coseley Railway Station by the volunteers who recovered the mangled horse from the undergrowth where she had been dumped by metal thieves who had hacked her legs off. The group of friends christened the iron horse Rosie and set about lovingly putting her back into one piece before successfully negotiating with several railway organisations to get her erected on Coseley Railway Station Platform 1. Last Friday's meeting was Kevin's first official return to the Black Country since he completed Iron Horses, described as the longest sculpture in the world between Wolverhampton and Birmingham railway stations. British Rail commissioned the work to liven up the line between the two Industrial Revolution powerhouses, and Anthony had to create a piece of art best viewed speeding past on a train. He said, "I wanted it to look like a moving animation. The 12 iron horses are the same horse in different poses, like they were running alongside the track. I travelled the line and picked where I wanted them to be, and then British Rail and the four councils had to work out the logistics. I called it Iron Horses because that was the name Native Americans called trains when they first saw them, and they needed to be black to look like silhouettes from the train." He added, "British Rail paid £10,000 for the entire thing, and as a young whippersnapper in my 30s, I was just happy I managed to make a few grand out of it. British Rail hired a special train for the unveiling of Iron Horses, where dignitaries travelled between Wolverhampton and Birmingham to see them as Kevin imagined." He said, "It was a big deal. A lord officially unveiled it, and it felt great to see my Iron Horses beside the tracks." The following year, the Isle of Man sculptor had a one-man show at London's Serpentine Gallery from March to May 1988, and then moved to Ireland for 20 years, where he pursued a career in film. In 2016, he returned to the railway and created platform pieces at Brixton Railway Station, which depicts travellers waiting for trains and were given listed status by Historic England. However, he never forgot his 12 iron horses in the Black Country. He said, "Every few years there would be a story about one of the horses. They would either have been vandalised or attacked, but when I saw what had happened to my Coseley horse, I had to come and see it." Nat Partridge and friends from Bailey Street Allotments spent their own money restoring Rosie to her resplendent best and wanted to unveil her to the public for the Queen's Jubilee. However, due to wrangling with rail companies, they were not allowed to put the horse on the platform until last year. The friends have continued to improve Coseley Railway Station, where alongside the majestic Galloping Rosie, there are a number of striking features that may also catch your eye. That includes a large flower bed, hanging baskets, a floral Coseley sign, a colourful train mural and a mosaic depicting the nearby Birmingham Canal. And there's even strawberries for passengers to pick during the summer. Their efforts were even recognised with a national award which named Coseley the second best kept local train station in the UK. Nat said, "We are so honoured Kevin came to Coseley to see Rosie. We have had a wonderful afternoon hearing all about how his sculpture came to life. Rosie looks amazing, and hopefully the other 11 will get some loving care too."
From trains to trams. And last week we learned that the long-awaited tram link from Wensby to Dudley had been delayed by another year, almost 30 years since the line was first proposed, while the extension to Briley Hill High Street may never be built. But it wasn't always like that. In 1877, the Wolverhampton Tramways Order was passed, giving the Wolverhampton Tramways Company permission to construct three routes, one running from a central hub in Queen Street to Tettenhall, a second one to Willenhall, and a third to Bilston and Moxley. And they didn't hang about, those Victorians, as within a matter of months, it was ready to run. The first section from Tettenhall to Queen Square was inspected by Major General Charles Scrope Hutchinson of the Board of Trade on April 30, 1878. He recorded that the horse-drawn tram took 6 minutes to get from the yard at the bottom of Darlington Street to Queen Square and back, including the time it took to turn the tram around. It took a further 9 minutes to reach the terminus in Tettenhall Road. After being passed as fit for service, it opened to the general public on May the 1st. Wolverhampton Tramways, a private company, laid 1,800 tonnes of steel rails bought from the Landor Siemens Steel Company in South Wales and paved around them with 10,000 tonnes of granite from Mount Sorrel and the Clee Hills. The cost of laying the rails was about £50,000, £5 million at today's prices, and a further £10,000, £1 million today, was needed for yards, stabling, horses and tram cars. The company bought a mixture of tram cars, some from H. Hughes & Co. of Leicester and others from Stevenson & Co. of New York. By the end of 1878, all three lines were up and running, offering a service that ran every 15 minutes. The line never quite reached the centre of Tettenhall Village though. The steep climb up Old Hill, a 1 in 5 gradient, was just too much for the horses. Within another year, Wolverhampton was linked to Dudley, and in mid-1880, the Board of Trade gave permission for the use of steam on the 3-mile route to Willenhall and the 1.5-mile route to the edge of Tettenhall. However, the Board of Trade were not convinced that the sharp curve at the top of Piper's Row would be safe for this newfangled steam technology and turned down the company's application to use it on the Bilston line. A steam tram was built by Hughes's Locomotive and Tramway Engine Works of Loughborough, but was restricted to use on the Tettenhall Road line. In October 1881, Wolverhampton Town Council banned steam trams altogether, although they continued to be used on the Dudley services for many years.
By 1896, the tramway was carrying more than 1.6 million passengers a year and making annual profits of more than £5,000, about £600,000 at today's prices. In 1898, Wolverhampton Corporation made the decision to take the tram line into public control. The council paid £26,750 for all the tram lines within its boundary, completing the purchase on May 1st, 1900, and the takeover would mark the beginning of a new era for the tram service. The new Wolverhampton Corporation Transport Department began a comprehensive modernisation programme, replacing the 4-foot 8.5-inch tracks with a narrower 3-foot 6-inch gauge. More significantly, the corporation made the decision to electrify the route. But while most local authorities accepted that overhead cables were a price that would have to be paid for the bold new era of electrification, environmentalists along the Tettenhall Road were not impressed. To pacify the objectors, the corporation adopted a system of underground electrical pickups, known as the Lorraine system. It was unique to Wolverhampton, apart from a brief experiment in Washington, D.C. It involved the use of contact boxes set in the ground at 10 feet intervals and connected to each other by cable. The update was accompanied by the construction of the grandiose terracotta tram depot in Cleveland Road, which survived for 116 years before demolition in 2017. But while the Lorraine system avoided the need for unsightly cables, it wasn't much fun for the horses. If they had the misfortune to step on one of the electrified studs, and placed their other foot on the rails, they would be electrocuted instantly, and there were many reports of dead horses being left at the side of the road. Furthermore, when the copper pickup went over a box, it gave off a blue flash and made a sound like gunfire, and the snow would regularly bring the trams to a halt. The other problem was that it left Wolverhampton isolated from the rest of the region, as no other operator had adopted the Lorraine system. The Dudley, Stourbridge and District Electric Traction Company, which had made the switch to electric the year before, adopted the system of overhead cables. Despite these problems, the Lorraine system ran for 20 years, until general wear and tear led to its replacement with overhead cables in 1921. Meaning that the town could connect to the services in Dudley once more. However, a lack of maintenance during the war years led to a deterioration in the rails, and trams were rapidly going out of fashion. To save the cost of replacing the tracks, Wolverhampton Corporation decided to replace them with trolley buses. To those who don't remember, they were electric buses which made use of the new overhead cables but ran on conventional rubber tyres and didn't require rails. The final Wolverhampton tram, at least for the next 70 years, ran on August 26, 1928. They continued in Dudley until 1930.
Up next, it's trivia time, brought to us by Flashback Roger and his Did You Know feature. Take it away, Roger.
Hello again, everyone. Well, we've had some glorious weather during the past week, and I hope that you haven't got too uncomfortable and overheated. There are a few cooling items to think about this week. I'll press on and say, did you know that? There are more than 300 varieties of watermelon. The Watermelon Board says that the most popular kinds are seedless, seeded and mini watermelons, all of which have the pinky red centre, but there are yellow and orange watermelons too. And the largest bikini parade took place on August 19, 2012 in Huliado City, China. 1,085 people donned bikinis for this occasion, and the length of the parade stretched a staggering 1.1 miles. A rerun was considered, but the participants all declined, as it was suggested it would be in the winter time. And we all know what snow angels are, but what about sand angels? The record for the most people making sand angels at once is 1,387. The event took place on June 10, 2017, on Stern Beach on Lake Michigan. They set a world record that day, officially making it into the Guinness Book of Records. And the summer months owe their names to Roman times, as June gets its name from the Roman goddess of childbirth Juno, while Julius Caesar gave his name to July, and Emperor Augustus gave his name to, well, you guessed it, it was August. And Wall sausages date back to 1786, when Richard Wall opened a market stall. His company grew making pies and sausages, but always had to lay off workers in the summer when demand fell away in the hot weather. In 1913, Thomas Wall hit on the idea of making ice cream to make up for the poor meat sales in the summer. It wasn't until after World War I in 1922 that his idea went into production with instant success. And lastly, as we're talking of cooling things, ice lollies, or popsicles if you're an American, first appeared by accident in 1905, when a glass full of fruit juice became frozen on a windowsill one winter. It's assumed that the boy left the glass with its stirrer in place. So I think, as they say, all the rest of it is history. And finally, before I sign off, I have a little riddle for you this week. So see if you can work out the answer. So then, what belongs to you, but everyone you meet uses it? What belongs to you, but everyone you meet uses it? Have a good think, and Mina will tell you the answer later. Good luck. Well, reading this week's Did You Knows has made me quite hungry. I think I'll have some hot dogs later. And if I need a cooling down, I'll have me an ice lol. Ooh, I wonder if they still do frozen jubblies. They used to last ages and ages. Any road up, I'm off now. So I'll leave you with those things to chew over and say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra!
Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, Mina here. Hope you're all keeping well. Hasn't it been a glorious week this week? With plenty of dry, warm and sunny days, it sure has been much more like summer. But will it last? As you know too well, nothing is ever settled and straightforward with our weather, but it does look as though this current spell of sunny intervals is set to remain, with plenty of dry, warm weather expected in the week ahead. Temperatures should also remain settled around 20 degrees across the region. In result, UV levels will be fluctuating between medium and high. So do take care and use the necessary protection if you are out and about in the sunshine. The sunrise and sunset times are 5:30 a.m. for the sunrise and 9 p.m. for the sunset. Friday, 26th of July, is looking like it shall be a fine day all round, dry, warm, sunny, with a light summer breeze to keep things comfortable. Temperatures will be very pleasant with a high of 23 degrees. Moving on and into the weekend, we should see this settled spell of sunshine carry through for both Saturday 27th and Sunday 28th of July. But with the breeze coming in more from the northwest on Saturday, there is a chance that it may bring some light rain into the region during the afternoon. Temperatures should reflect this and will remain around average at 20 degrees on Saturday, but may return to something a little warmer on Sunday, around 22 degrees. Moving on to next week, and we continue to slide forward into the season of summer sun, as from Monday 29th of July right through to Thursday 1st of August, this settled spell of pleasant weather should remain. With a breeze coming up from the south, it should help to pump up the temperature a little too, so we may find things up in the mid-20s again. At the moment, Wednesday 31st of July is looking like it might drop in a random morning of light drizzle, but this should clear as we progress through the day. All in all, considering how we were still in our winter warmers just a couple of weeks ago, I think we can forgive the weather for throwing in one soggy morning. Do take care, have a wonderful week, and enjoy the weather.
Now, here come the quiz answers, and they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Feeling confident? How will you score? Let's see. Question 1. How many varieties of watermelons are there? And the answer? 300. Wow. Question 2. Which country hosted a huge bikini parade? And the answer? China. Question 3. What is the summer equivalent of making snow angels? And the answer? Sand angels. Question 4. What is Juno the goddess of? And the answer here is childbirth. Question 5. What did Thomas Wool start to do to save his summer workers' jobs? And the answer here is produce ice cream. And finally, question 6. What are ice lollies called in America? And the answer here is popsicles. Did you get them all right? If not, not to worry, as I will be back next week to test you all once again. And don't worry, I've not forgotten the answer to Riddler's little puzzle from earlier. What belongs to you, but everyone you meet uses it? Well, the answer is, of course, your name. Bye for now.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!